Hey everybody, just a quick heads up that today's episode contains mention of premature childbirth and resulting birth defects.
Living in Denmark is pretty good. The country consistently ranks as one of the safest and happiest nations on the planet, and that's a big part of why I was so happy to move my family here in 2019.
And that's not to say that Denmark is some kind of utopian paradise. The system in place that fuels those safety and happiness rankings can be tricky or even unavailable for those of us who are not born into them. I love my life in Denmark, but when I moved here for my partner's job in 2017, many aspects of life felt like it was sink or swim.
If you've ever felt that way yourself, this episode will give you some helpful resources and show you that you're in good company. My name is Annie Samples, and you're listening to What Are You Doing in Denmark? The podcast that helps you make Denmark make sense.
And my name is Derek Hartman, and I'm super excited that our guest today has made it her mission to turn the experience of moving to Denmark from sink or swim to a soft landing. You're about to hear from Lindsay Jensen, the founder and editor of The International. It's a monthly independent publication that presents compelling stories and useful content that's aimed to assist internationals in their adjustment to life in Denmark.
Welcome, right. Lindsay.
Thank you.
Yeah,
glad
to have you. It's so lovely.
Both of my previous feature stories, so it's kind of cool that we get to meet you.
Yes. Well, every time I mention you or somebody mentions you, they always say, oh my gosh, she's incredible. She's the best. And I have to agree.
That's so
sweet.
Yeah,
we're so thankful for you.
And really excited to learn more about your story and how The International came to be. And I guess how you came to be in Denmark. Now, Annie and I know a little bit, but could you maybe tell listeners sort of what you're doing here, how your journey here began?
It probably started from when my son was born, my youngest son, in South Africa. I was originally from the UK, but we moved to South Africa when I was a baby, so I was brought up South African with a lot of sort of expat sort of pods, I would say, because my parents were both British and they didn't fit with the culture. So I feel like I've done this before in a way, because my parents obviously didn't gravitate towards the locals. They gravitated towards all the other expats because we moved there in the 70s. Mm. And anyway, when we moved to Denmark, it was definitely because of our younger son. He was born early. He was born 29 weeks.
Oh, wow.
So he suffered brain damage, unfortunately. We didn't know to the extent, so we had to wait after a year to see what was actually happening.
Right.
We could see he wasn't reaching his milestones. So we kind of looked at him and looked at the setting of South Africa. It's a wonderful country, but is it a wonderful country with somebody with special needs? Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they don't have the resources. They don't have the government funding to support. And because I was from the UK, I thought, should we go to the UK? Or should we move to Denmark? My husband lived with me for 10 years, being a Dane himself. He lived for 10 years in South Africa. And he was like, listen, it's up to you. I'm super easy. I have one of the most chilled husbands in the world.
Fabulous.
And he was like, what do you want to do? And I said, you know what? I think after talking to a friend of mine in the UK, she was working in the special needs section. She said, everything you have to get in the UK, a lot of it is through charity funding. Hmm. Maybe Denmark is a better option. They also know that the Scandinavian countries are further developed when it comes to special needs. So due to my son's disability and his future, and also my older son, South Africa is really great. He was at private school, but we also knew how would his education be viewed in Europe. Hmm. And we really wanted him to look at all of the options out there. We didn't want him to just stay in South Africa because he has this international background. Dad's Danish. I'm British born. He's living in South Africa. We really wanted to have a worldview. So we decided to move. And no, we did not have a soft landing. It was very tough.
I'm so sorry.
2008 was not an easy time. I think even before that, it wasn't easy. I stupidly, as well as my husband, thought, I've got all this experience because I had a career as an art director. So I was working for a large publication over there, and I've done graphic design, I've done writing. So I had so much experience in marketing. I thought, I'll get a job with my experience and my background.
Easy.
No, that's not the case when I moved here. So that's how we ended up here. It was definitely through a medical choice and for the future of our kids.
I don't think I've met anybody that's moved here for that reason, and that's really admirable.
It's for our children. Yeah. We do everything, you know.
100%.
We do everything for our kids. And if my kids could have a safer life, South Africa's got a very high crime rate.
Yeah, yeah, I can relate to that.
I didn't see where South Africa was going at the time, and I'm not downing South Africa, but it just felt like we had to give them this opportunity, and especially Bjorn with all his needs that needed to be met. He has cerebral palsy.
Yeah.
He's full-time in a wheelchair. He doesn't eat normally. He has a tube in his stomach. He's nonverbal, but he can communicate like you will not believe.
Yes.
He is super diva. He lets us know what's going on. He's very vocal like his mother. He's wonderful.
There's just so much that I relate to. Well, first of all, the resource that you've created as the International and the resource that we hope to create, you know, these didn't exist all when you were here in any capacity. Social media wasn't so much.
I think I started my Facebook account when I moved here in 2008 because I wanted my friends and family to see what we were doing, what the experience was. And that's when I kind of got interested in social media. Instagram wasn't really a thing. Twitter, now even today, I would say Twitter in Denmark is for politicians and journalists.
Oh, interesting.
Which is so interesting when I speak to Americans because it's very big in the States. But here it's not. You know, it's funny, as I travel around Europe, I can see where the, you know, who are the go-to social media. And I would definitely say for us, it was definitely Facebook at the time. There was no international house.
Really?
Okay. There was no international house in Copenhagen. So coming back here, my husband, we were both young. He'd never had a handicapped child. And he says, well, how do we do this? How do we get into the system? And that was a Dane.
Oh.
So he had to come back and say to Denmark, I'm back.
Yeah.
I've been away for 10 years. I'm back. He had to start up his CPR card again. And we went to the Boer service, like the commune, the municipality. That was our first point of call that we had to go in and see them. And they said, right, your children, okay, they're fine. They're Danish. We had made sure that they had their Danish passports before they came here. I have a British and a South African passport because I'm a naturalized South African because of the age I moved to South Africa.
Cool.
But I thought, let me come in my EU passport.
Sure.
Yes. And then I came in British passport. And of course, as we all know, Brexit's happened now. So it kind of puts me back into the non-EU box.
Really?
Yes.
You weren't like grandfathered in that way or?
No. You know, a lot of people, there's a perception that if you're married to a Dane, and I've been married for 26 years, gives no meaning at all in Denmark.
Unreal.
It's like, you've been married 26 years, great.
Good for you.
But
I'm not particularly versed in all of the laws of immigrating to Denmark. However, I know, like, comparing stories with people who are married to a Dane, that in many ways my family reunification visa was much easier because we're both non-EU.
Right.
Yeah. So I came on my now husband's visa
at
the time. We were just partners, but we qualified. And it was much easier for me at the time because, you know, if he loses his job, we've got 6 months and we're out of the country. You know, so for them, it's not as much of an investment to give me a visa.
Yes.
But I guess it's just a lot tougher if you're married to a Dane. You don't always think that.
No.
You think it would be easier.
I think in most countries it is. Yeah.
I think in most countries it is. I mean, you've got the show like 90 Day Fiancé and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, I love that.
Denmark says no, no to that. You're not going to see that in Denmark. But that would be so fun. Yeah. I would love that.
I'd like to see that version here. That would be interesting.
I am so curious. I mean, so many logistics, I'm sure, were so difficult. But I'm curious what comes to mind when you think about some of the initial challenges and successes you had right after you moved. And how old were your sons when you did make the move?
Connor was 10 and Bjorn was 4. That was really scary because my husband got a job because he's in IT.
Yeah.
So he was like instant getting a job. Me, I had to kind of look around and he said, listen, and we've always been very equal in the way that we parent. He's a typical Dane. My friends in South Africa adore him because he's not this macho guy. He's like, he would sit with the ladies, he'd be changing Bjorn and Connor's nappy, and they would be like,
who is this guy?
Where did you get him?
Right?
Yeah.
It's so crazy when you think about it.
Wow,
oh my gosh.
People are equal no matter their gender.
Yeah. Right.
So it's wonderful. But I think the challenge for me when I first got here, I think it was within 3 months, Niklas said, oh, I got a job.
Oh.
It was like that, instant. I said, oh, he's a Dane and he's an IT, so yes, of course he's going to get a job easily. And then he said to me, listen, I cannot help you with the process. I can help you. Like, we got all the technical stuff done with the CPR card and everything. Mm-hmm. There was no international house at the time, so you only had the bore service, and we all know what sometimes a nightmare that can be.
Yeah.
But they were quite helpful, I will say that. I think the first thing that really hit home was I'm sitting with two children, one that needed to go into what's called an integration school, and it's formed part of a public school, and it was a separate class for all these kids that came from other countries, and they were all popped together. And the interesting thing about that was like the UN all in one.
Yeah.
Because they definitely gravitated towards different, like I could see the South Africans, the British, the Americans, the Filipinos all kind of got together in a group.
Oh, because of the English language?
I think it must be, or maybe the similar cultures.
Yeah. Or social cultures.
Yeah, exactly.
Are similar.
Exactly. Huh. So that's, you know, kind of went an integration class, and then it was about 5-6 months later, he could move on to the normal formal schooling. He never went to an international school. We decided not to do that because we were here to stay.
Yeah.
His dad's Danish. He needs to learn about his culture. And I feel with the international schools, even though I would say the quality of education is higher.
Right.
He came from a private school in South Africa, and we obviously wanted him to carry on. But we felt it was more important that he understood the culture. And
totally.
I think you can't do that in an international school. I don't think it's as equipped to do that. They don't push Danish as much. Mm. And I didn't want him to be left behind. He was already 10 years old. You know, it's a difficult age just before teenage years. And it was definitely a hard transition for him because when he started the school, he didn't quite fit in because, you know, these kids were Danish, you know. And even though we were in Islandsbrugge, which is a very open you know, sort of there are more internationals, but in 2009, there weren't a lot of people from other countries. So I think kids have it a lot easier now. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying they're all the same, but I do believe it's a much softer landing for the kids now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's tough. And I wouldn't speak English. I wouldn't speak Danish with him, only English, because I was advised to do that because he's going to hear Danish everywhere, the radio, the TV, school. So I think if that's one piece of advice I would say for people going, well, should I speak another language or should I do it because I'm learning Danish? I didn't go to Danish school. I learned Danish a different way.
Right.
I didn't have the time with my younger son.
Understandable.
Yeah. There was no ways I could take evenings and go to Danish school.
Right.
But he definitely, once he got into the system, started making Danish friends, it became a little easier for him.
Really? Okay.
Yeah,
That's so great.
It did.
So he went to school, and then so you were home, I'm assuming, with Bjorn, or did Bjorn go into any sort of care?
Bjorn went into a school.
Cool.
Yeah, for him. It took a while, and actually the first time when we were at home was just me, Connor, and Bjorn. We were sitting there and I had to phone the Copenhagen commune because I had to go what is known as a sales behandler.
Yeah.
And a sales behandler is like your contact person, like a social worker that you use in the system. It's not seen as a bad thing. It's seen as a very normal thing because you need the support to navigate your way if you have a special needs child, whether you're Danish or whether you're a foreigner. So it was really important to get somebody, and I didn't speak any Danish. So I picked up the phone. I said, can you speak in English? And she went, night. And she put the phone down. That was my first experience. And I was horrified. I was so upset. And I said to Connor, you've been watching cartoons. Can you help mom? And Connor's like, okay.
I so relate.
So he was like, okay. And he was trying to do it. And they were very sweet with him. But eventually we got through to somebody who actually came to our house to actually sit and talk to us about putting Connor into a school and putting Bjorn into a school. So I would say they were very helpful, but that initial, it was an international house. It was just the normal commune. And to me, it blew my mind that they didn't have somebody who could speak English.
And do you think that they didn't, or do you think that they didn't?
You never know. And this is what I just try to think anytime I have an interaction like that, like, you know, I'm thinking maybe she didn't feel comfortable. Maybe her English, maybe she was embarrassed of her English or something. Yeah. And then she's thinking, I'm not going to waste this person's time anymore. Click, you know what I'm saying? But to you, coming from such a different culture in such a vulnerable state, like maybe you would tell somebody that story. They're like, oh, yeah, that's crazy. But I completely understand. I know that you completely understand as well. I would have like burst into tears and probably not recovered the rest of the day.
I did. I actually became, I would say that I became very isolated being at home once the boys had gone off to their different schools. We were living on the metro line and my husband came home one day. He says, have you been out? And I said, no, I can't. I'm so scared. When I look back at that person I was there to now, it shocks me. And he said to me, right, here's a metro card. I want you to get on. I want you to ride it to the end of the line and back. And I'm like, why? I said, are you coming with me? He goes, no, you're going on your own. And I said, you're such an asshole.
Sorry, I love it.
And he said to me, I said, you won't even support me. And he goes, you have got to get out of this house. And I think that is the one thing. You have to throw yourself out there at some stage.
Yeah, it's not easy,
You really do. No, it's not. And it's isolating and you feel out of your comfort zone. Everybody's speaking a different language around you. It's a lot. And I always say, people say, how long does it take? And I said, you know what? It's individual, but I say between 2 to 4 years.
100%. Totally.
Before you decide, this is it. I so wanted to go back home so many times, but then I looked at my boys.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is for them.
It's wild. It's it's the only thing that keeps you going.
Yeah, I think so.
And that I always give Derek so many kudos because just coming here, making friends, in some ways, like having your kids can almost be like a security blanket and a reason to stay in a lot of ways. And so I guess you had your partner. I guess you and Mike, and maybe that was your reason for staying, but I just have so much respect for somebody that just like sticks it out just themselves because I would have left. I would have left. So I respect it.
Yeah.
Are those tough times part of what inspired you to begin your work with the International? I could see that really being a
it was. I was seeing so many friends leaving, coming here, not integrating. And I'm not just talking Copenhagen. In particular, I'm talking the smaller villages that are out there where people are in deepest, darkest Jutland, for instance. Sorry, no offense to Jutland, but it's a really, really great peninsula. But there are so many small towns where people go there and they're kind of stuck. There's no transport that's close enough and they're stuck at home. And I had so many people when I started the International reaching out saying, I don't know how to do this. Help. Wow. And it was hard not to turn. My husband said, you can't answer every person. I said, oh, yeah, I can. I will. Because, you know, these are people reaching out. They want help. You know, I would hate for something drastic to happen. And I wanted to see my friends that I was meeting here leave and go, you know, and enjoy their lives here and not feel like they're stuck here.
Yeah.
So I think that's where the first sort of thoughts into my mind. I was building my own little network anyway.
Yeah.
I worked for a publication when I first moved here, eventually when I did get a job, which, I came in as a freelancer.
Wow.
During a summer holiday.
That's the way you gotta do
it. Yeah, I picked up for a designer I've been doing design forever. This is not my thing, but I was like, yeah, I'll do it. And then they were like, do you want to come in more and do you want to do this? And that's how I picked up.
It's a great little nugget of advice and a little tip there, too.
Start as a freelancer.
Find your way in.
And you kind of have to humble yourself and take what you can get, but just go with it, you know.
And learn the little tiny things that you can say in Danish, because even talking to the commune, because I had so much work because of my son, I had to constantly talk to the commune. Copenhagen was fine because most people could understand English, but then I moved to the country. That's a whole other level. And that's why I keep bringing up, you know, foreigners that are living outside of the main cities. It's really tough for them. And I think we've got to remember that. I think Copenhagen, because I've lived here, I can say this, I think it's easier in Copenhagen with the language barrier compared to somewhere in the middle of nowhere. It's and not just Zealand, Jylland, Fyn. You know, it's so important for people to know that they're not alone. That there's somebody there. Now, today, there are so, like your podcast, there are so many resources, the internationals out there. And when we do feature stories, which is always our cover, that's our thing, is to make sure that we're getting a variety of people from all over the world. And they always say, well, my story is not that great. I'm like, everybody's story is great. 100%. They're all different, you know? Yes. So don't put yourself down like that. I want to hear your stories. Because somebody will pick up their paper, read it online and go, that's me.
Yeah. And that's huge.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah,
you know?
I love that.
Yeah.
So logistically, what did that look like starting up the international? Because it was initially a paper publication, right?
Yeah. So before COVID, 2018 is when we started.
Oh, great.
So COVID wasn't even, it was a distant thing. We hadn't even got to that monster yet.
The whole world ahead of you.
Yeah, exactly. We were so excited.
Yeah.
I'd kind of stopped at a previous job, then I'd worked somewhere else. And I was like, you know what? There are publications out there, but they're not community-based. And I think that's what was missing. Now I can see there's more communities that have come up, and I think a lot of it is because of COVID. A lot of communities started, like you said.
Yeah, that's how Mike and I got started on YouTube, and then, of course, that grew into us being here right now.
Yeah. Exactly. So I think a lot of the community-based stuff came from COVID.
Yeah.
And when I started in 2018, I was sitting with one of my best friends, Marion. We were sitting at a table with her husband, Kenneth, and my husband, and we were busy talking. And Nick said to me, my husband, he said, tell Kenneth and Marion about your idea. And I said, well, I've been playing with the idea because of my background. I've come from print. I've come from publishing. I've been through the whole thing. I know how to put something together. I said, but I've had this idea. And Kenneth was like in there. Kenneth is a friend, a family friend, but he's also a businessman. He's got a lot of different businesses. Mm. He was like, I'm going to support this. Aww. And I was like, really? And he says, yeah. And we're just bantering around names and that. And I said, you know, we're all internationals. Even the Danes, when they're outside of Denmark, we're all internationals. And that's where the name came up from. But that was how it kind of started. And then we started brainstorming. And I said, I want to see real stories of real people. Mm. I want my covers to be real people that are here. I even went as far as to have some covers with Danes that were living outside of Denmark.
Oh, cool.
Because they're also going through the same challenges.
Yeah.
And it was very important when I started, because we didn't have a lot of money to do this. We started with some advertising, which obviously covered some things. We don't do that anymore because I feel like it took away. I was spending so much time on sales when I just wanted to focus on what I started this for.
Right.
And I started talking about cultural nuances and, you know, what is it like having a child here in Denmark and all those sort of ideas, businesses in Denmark, you know, all these food. So it came from that of all these different things. And I spoke to a couple of people and said, hey, do you fancy doing some writing? You're like the expert in relocation. This was one of my first people, Laura. And she was like, yeah, I'll give it a go. I'm not a writer. So it doesn't matter. I'll do the editing. It's no problem. And that's how we started growing the team. People then started contacting me once we got out on social media. And it picked up from there.
Now I want to go back and read every single issue.
Absolutely. And we'll have links to the international as well in the show notes. So if you have not encountered it yet and you're not following up on it, we will make sure that you have that in the show notes in the description. And you can also follow us as well for those resources. I think one of my favorite things, especially in what you said, Lindsay, is how it is community driven. And I think that's such a key difference in a lot of the things that are out there. And I can imagine, especially in 2018 as well, you know, it's one thing to have information online or information that's written by the Kommune or somebody who's Danish telling you what to do and how to integrate, but they don't have the experience that you have as an international to back it up.
Yes.
And I think it's just so nice to, something else you said, which is feel like you're not alone in navigating these things.
Yeah. It's scary for anybody coming to a new culture, whether you're here in Denmark or anywhere else. Denmark makes it particularly difficult because the culture is very different. There's a lot of nuances in it.
Yes.
They're a very insular culture. And it's not meant in a bad way. You know, I often would say to my husband, why do we have to go to parties and everybody does this queue and they all shake hands?
I still sort of avoid that. Yeah, it's almost like
do you go late?
Yeah. I go late because I'm American and that's different. I'm a time optimist. But no, it is very much like a receiving line. Like it's almost
so
like
royal.
This is a little dark, but it's almost like, you know, at a funeral when you have to go and like say hi to the family. You go around the room and it's
well,
everyone.
I didn't realize.
Wow. I asked
my husband about this and he says, well, it comes from old Viking times, which I didn't realize.
Oh, that's so cute.
The
actually.
Handshaking thing is to show you're not holding a weapon.
Okay.
And also when you say velbekomme, when you tell people to enjoy their meals, they're telling you it's okay, they won't attack you. So it comes from old Viking times, and I didn't know this. I was horrified. And I said to my husband, are you taking the piss? And he's like, no, no, I'm being serious.
That's actually kind of cool.
And I thought, okay, I'd take a hand. Yeah. You know, now I'm like, okay.
It's never too late to remind people that you're not going to attack them.
Don't stab them.
Don't take it for granted.
Yeah,
I'm from Philadelphia.
I mean,
you might get attacked. You might have a weapon. It's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
We should.
That's hilarious.
But that's what he kind of. And then I kind of started looking at all these cultural nuances and thinking, that's why they did. Like, they've got this thing about, I will never forget, we had a friend of ours, Jason, and Jason, if you're listening, please excuse me telling the story, but it's hysterical. We were having a party at my place, and I had all these foreigners with us. We had some Danes as well there in the mix, and everybody had a bit too much to drink. Wow. Everybody went home. Jason was the last to go home, and we lived near Bella Center.
Yeah, yeah.
So he was in the parking lot with a bicycle, and he was just going in circles, and my husband went, what is Jason doing? And I said, I have no idea. He was so drunk, he couldn't figure out how to get out. Now, first of all, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, is he going to be okay? And Nick goes, yeah, it's fine. You know, typical Dane. He'll be fine. He'll make it home. So I get a call at 8 o'clock in the morning from his wife. I haven't seen Jason. Is he still at your place? Jason woke up at the side of a bus stop.
Oh.
He'd actually fallen with his bicycle.
Oh.
Was lying with his bicycle on top of him. He woke up to a whole bunch of people looking at him like this. Nobody had phoned the police. Nobody had phoned the ambulance.
Nobody bothered him, I'm
Nobody
sure.
Nobody bothered him. But I said this to Nick. I said, why would somebody not help him? And he went, because we don't interfere.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is an emergency. He says, yeah, but he was still breathing.
I thought you were going to say he was still in that parking lot.
I was like, he worked it out.
We watched him go out.
So he was breathing. He wasn't bleeding from anything.
No.
They're like, he's good.
I thought you were going to say, and he won the Tour de France.
Yeah.
2 years in a row. Yeah.
Wow. Good job, Jason.
Those stains.
That's so
good. That horrified me at first. And I said, but that's so uncaring. And the client goes, no, we're taught, you know what, if you ask for help. And I've learned this with the commune. If I want to get something for Bjorn, for instance, let's say we need to get him a loft lift, like a ceiling lift to help lift him because he can't obviously lift himself, I would have to apply for that.
Yeah,
I would have to apply for that through the commune. But if I don't ask, they're not going to tell you.
That is so indicative of so much about Danish culture. And it's just like you're saying, such an insular culture. And understand, it's a small country. It's an old country.
Yeah.
So everybody just kind of assumes that everybody else knows what's going on. And I understand that now. So for you to navigate that, I have so much respect for you. Because I'm over here like, where do I buy a lunchbox? And everybody's just like, of course, at the lunchbox store. You know, like, I couldn't even figure out those sorts of things. Like, where do I...
Don't get me started on stores. I don't understand why I have to go to 3 different stores to find everything I need.
Yes, try to make a recipe.
I miss stores in South Africa. Like, I'm sure you miss stores in America.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
They just like big box stores.
Yeah.
I don't even need like the big box, but just consistency in what's on the shelf. Some kind of logic in like why is the pasta next to the batteries, which is next to the hair dye, because that's just it came in and we dropped it off on a pallet and that's where it
that's so, yeah
and, why
and
do
I've
we
heard
have
that
to,
Copenhagen stores are worse, but I don't know. I've been around and I'd see
I'm not sure about that, about Copenhagen being worse. I think
that's the excuse.
I think so.
You don't think Copenhagen's worse, or like I just think it's all when I visited outside of Copenhagen, I'm like, oh, okay, we have this in common.
Yeah, it's the same. But I mean, it shocked me when I went back to South Africa, because you know how if you want something cold, a cold, cool drink, you have to go into their fridges, and those are priced, marked up. I don't know if you've noticed how expensive they are.
In Denmark?
Yes. If you compare it to what you would buy on the shelf that is not cold, they've marked it up. So when I was in South Africa, my sister said, will you go grab a couple of Cokes out the fridge. No. And I was like, where's the normal? And he says, they're there. They're in the fridge. And I said to the store manager, who my mom and my sister knew well, I said to him, why don't you have it just on the shelf? And he said, but it would be warm. And I said, yeah, but do you charge people extra? And they went, no. I said, in Denmark, they do.
I did not even realize that. I just thought they were all expensive.
Oh, I believe it. Yeah.
I really am impressed by, this is something that I say all the time, I'm very impressed by what I guess I perceive as Dane's tolerance to discomfort. Like Danes will like be like, yeah, I got this beer off of the shelf. Let's drink it now. And I'm like, I want to vomit thinking about that. Yeah. A lukewarm beer. Ah, scary. Yeah.
But that's
but I respect it. Yeah.
Yeah. But you're paying for the fridge. Yeah. I guess it's climate. I guess it's got to do a lot with the climate, which I 100% back.
Totally.
I work for an international school where one of our programs is about climate.
Yeah.
Is about being a climate activist. Cool. So I'm very behind that, very pro that, but I still like my cold drinks, but I don't want to pay so much for them.
Yeah. That is very valid.
All right, that is a lot of information. We're going to take a pause right here and then be back next week to hear more from Lindsay about her journey moving to Denmark, starting the international, and all of the changes that she's not only seen, but helped us all navigate as internationals living here.
She's full of incredible stories, so you're definitely going to want to tune in again.
And we'll see you next week.
Yeah.
Hi.